Ladies and gentlemen, please get started. Thank you. Jeff.
Good evening, and thank you for coming to this presentation. The purpose of this presentation is to get some information out to you guys that you may not have been privy to previously. We've got three guest speakers tonight. We've got Phil Savage from RC Engineers. We've got Rob Galbraith from Keystone Architecture. And we've got Todd Samuelson from Umbaugh & Associates. To give you a little background as to where we're coming from, the first slide, if you change it again. This is the original courthouse that was built in the place of our current courthouse. This was the very first one that Pulaski County had. It was a wood lath building, and eventually it was pulled off the site and moved to another location. This is the second courthouse that was built in its place. This one was built in 1862 of brick. And the people of Pulaski County decided that this wasn't good enough for our county, so they built the next one, which is the one we currently have, and it was built in 1894. I wanted to show you these to show you where we came from and where we currently are. To give you an idea of what the timeline is for the current project that we're looking at, in April of 2013, the maintenance department did a walkthrough of all of our county buildings. We took stock of the current conditions and any problems that we noted, we made note of so that we could revisit and possibly make repairs later. During that initial maintenance walkthrough, we also did an ADA assessment. To see where we were as far as ADA compliance, and we found that we were way off the mark. In December 2013, we had an Indiana State air quality inspection because there were some concerns with the air quality in the basement of the courthouse. We found that we just met the standards. However, there is stagnant air in the bottom. There is no clean air inflow. And August of 2014, we had Train come in and do an energy efficiency survey and found out that if we took steps changing some of the HVAC systems and different lighting, we could actually save a ton of money on our energy bill, and it would actually pay for itself after the first year. Then in October of 2014, we had Atlas do a site inspection of our building. The reason we had them do that was because of the damage that we started to note in the structure itself. They came back, and they gave us quotes on what it would cost to repair it, but the quotes they gave us were just based on the exterior of the building, the retention wall, and they never went inside the building or dug down to the foundation. In May of 2015, during a joint session presentation, I pointed out to the commissioners and the council 12 points of repair and safety the building required, and at that time, the addition of a add-on was suggested. The addition was to cover a lot of the shortfalls that we were facing as far as ADA requirements and safety concerns. From July 2014 to June 2015, we had local contractors come in and do a site review. The reason that we did this, because we wanted to know what kind of scope we were looking at, and we got a pretty good idea. After the site review, it was decided that we needed to take action, and these repairs are far beyond the scope of the maintenance department budget. There's just too much to be done. So, during joint session hearings, three architectural firms and engineering firms came in and gave presentation. Keystone, who Rob represents, was the one that the commissioners ended up selecting for the project. In January of 2016, RC Engineers presented its initial findings. They did a very in-depth, detailed study of the attic, and they found that there were 70-plus locations in the attic that needed repair, and it was an emergency type state. RC was given a green light to do an even further extensive evaluation, and that's what they came back with. In February of 2016, Keystone and RC made their presentation to the joint session detailing all of this. And that's when Keystone presented its initial edition of the designs. As it stands at this point, the only thing that has been approved and is moving forward is the attic repairs, and that's because of the immediate attention that it requires. During this whole process, ADA accessibility must be addressed, and federal law mandates it. If we don't meet their standards, we will lose our federal funding to our highway department. Courthouse safety and security has to be taken into consideration per Indiana Supreme Court. I'm being told that we are very close to being forced to have single point of entry security for our courts as well as every other office in the building. That's another portion of this that will be taken care of with an addition. And then, of course, public parking is another ongoing problem that we face. Here's the big one, cost. The original suggested cost for the completed work, the complete renovation and restoration of the current structure, the addition, and then all of the site work is $6,520,000. Then you can see how the costs are broken down. If instead of adding the renovation of the current building in with the rest of the project, it drops the total cost for just the addition and the repairs to $4,020,000. With the renovation, of course, it takes it back to $6,500,000. Alternatives. We've looked at more than just building an addition. We've looked at more than just fixing what we have. And in every case, it ends up that it's more cost effective to repair what we have and add on than to build a building of that equal square footage. I've talked to several architect firms and they all agree with that statement. You can't build, if you're going to build a courthouse, it has to meet certain criteria. And, that's where these numbers come from. We've looked at alternate existing locations, new construction on current site, new buildings on other sites, and found that they're all not feasible due to distance or cost. And then demolition of the current building carries additional cost and processes due to it being on the historical register. Just getting permission to tear down a courthouse like we have takes at least 2 years. Now, I'll introduce the next gentleman that's going to make a presentation. It's Phil Savage with RC Engineers.
Thanks, Jeff. As Jeff mentioned, my name is Phil Savage with RC Engineers. I'm a professional engineer here in the state of Indiana. We're with RC Engineers out of Fishers, just on the northeast side of Indianapolis. And we perform the exterior assessment of the building and also the assessment of the attic. Part of the exterior assessment, there was two parts to it. The first part, we used binoculars and visual assessment from the ground level, but we also brought in a drone or a unmanned aerial vehicle to assess the upper reaches of the clock tower and the upper portions of the building that aren't clearly visible from the ground level. That gave us the opportunity to look at some areas that aren't necessarily clear from the ground level. This right here is this little dark spot on the clock tower. From the ground level, it just maybe looks like a shadow, but when you get closer with the drone, it's actually a hole in the sheet metal trim that has deteriorated to the point where birds can fly in there and nest. You can get moisture into the building from there, and corrosion is just going to continue. Here's another example of what you can't see from the ground, but the drone was able to see from behind that sheet metal ornamentation. These are a little bit more obvious from the ground level. There's some sheet metal tears and sheet metal seams that have split. There's quite a bit of corrosion, and a lot of times that corrosion is worse than it actually looks on the surface because it, similar to a car, the sheet metal is going to corrode from the inside out, and there's also probably quite a bit more of deterioration underneath that paint that's hidden from view. Now, that is repairable. We just have to strip the paint off, clean all the corrosion. Obviously, the hole before will have to be completely repaired, but most of these types of situations are repairable. And then you get a nice, fresh, clean coat of paint on there and protect that for the years to come. There are quite a few areas where water is infiltrating into the building that we found. These two in particular are in the attic, and we think those are directly related to the gutters. And as you can see, there's just quite a bit of water and moisture trapped in the wood framing in the attic, right, in those two locations. A little bit more concerning is some of the splits in the mortar joints and some of the deteriorated mortar. The sandstone is the primary guard against moisture infiltration in the building. And anywhere where the mortar has is deteriorated or has fallen out, like you see here in this picture, is a direct line for water to enter into the building. There's also in several locations where the sandstone is beginning to what we call exfoliate, or kind of, that's right here. That's where the outer layer is beginning to shave off. And that is actually extremely common in sandstone, and it's a natural occurrence, but it's something that we need to slow down and preserve the sandstone for years to come. Here's another example of moisture that's infiltrating into the building. The white that you see on that inside of the brick, that's actually the interior wall of the clock tower, and water has infiltrated all the way into the building, condensed and evaporated, leaving efflorescence or crystallized salt on the surface. More concerning is in the courtroom. You can see here and here where the plaster and the paint has begun to peel, and you see some plaster damage also. That's another opportunity or another location where moisture has infiltrated directly through the building wall onto the surface and in your courtroom. Similarly, down in the basement, I think this is actually in Jeff's office in the bottom right corner, water has gone straight through the sandstone and the mortar joints again and is causing organic growth and paint failure on the surface, inside surface of that sandstone. Around the concrete steps and the limestone walls adjacent to those steps, we're starting to see some issues also. The concrete steps themselves are starting to show some signs of spalling and deterioration. It's not terrible right now, but if we let that go too long, that'll be a trip hazard in the future. And as you can see in that picture in the bottom left corner, that wall is starting to tip over. And we need to rebuild that and firm that up so that doesn't continue to tip over. We're seeing similar and actually worse tipping of the perimeter wall or all the way around the building. We're also seeing some cracking in that wall due to that tipping. The picture on the upper left-hand corner shows a level that should be straight up and down, but it's actually, as you can see, at an angle due to the tipping. And there's a few other pictures there that clearly show some of the waviness and in and out of the wall right now. We need to reestablish the retaining ability of this wall. As Jeff mentioned, we also did a thorough assessment of the attic structure, the roof framing structure. These two pictures here, one was taken from the drone, and the next one is the attic framing plan that we drew up while we were performing the assessment. Here's a little bit bigger picture of the attic framing plan that we drew up, and if you go to the next slide, you start to see the 50 to 70 locations in red that we noticed while we were up there that were a structural concern.
In the next few slides, we'll start to see some of those structural concerns that we've observed up in the attic.
Go back one, please.
The first of these is where the framing members come in right at this point, is right here, and they bear on the brick masonry wall, which lines up directly below the clock tower stone. When we take a closer look, that rafter that is intended to bear and be in contact with that brick masonry wall is actually completely unsupported. We also saw in one location a rafter that was broken. And in another location, the remnant of a post that was there before that is no longer there. Not sure of the reasoning for that, but it is not currently there right now. Throughout the attic, there is a series of what we've been calling props or posts. These are literally supports from the roof framing, the rafters, and they are supported down from the ceiling joists below and the floor joists below. Many of these are beginning to bow due to overstressing and overloading, and in other locations, beams that the props support are starting to pull away and the nails are starting to pull out of the prop themselves due to overloading. Here's another picture of your courtroom, and this is the last slide I have for you. Those two lines there are in line with two trusses that support the ceiling joists for the courtroom ceiling. The bottom left corner is one of these trusses, and that is one prop that has been added over the years, and it supports the roof rafters, similarly other ones, but it is beginning to tip over those two trusses because it was only intended to support the ceiling and not the roof rafters. If you go to the next slide, you can start to see how out of plumb that truss is. It should be in line with that rafter, but it is starting to tip over. With that, I'll turn it over to Rob with Keystone Architecture.
Good evening. Can you hear me all right if I stay away from the mic? Is this good? Does that work? I'm Rob Galbraith, president of Keystone Architecture, and Keystone's been around since 1988. We're in Lafayette, Indiana, just down the road, a little bit over an hour, and I've been working with Jeff and others here to try to solve some of these problems for you on this courthouse project. And we're going to go through a series of slides that shows you some of the plan revisions to the courthouse. I wanted to start with a few pictures of the existing courthouse just to remind you one of the major reasons why we're here. This is what people walk up to on every side of your courthouse. If you've been there, you know this. In order to get a courthouse, you have to go up some steps. The ADA law, American with Disabilities law, has been in effect. It's a federal law. It's been in effect since July 26, 1990. It's a federal law that says if you're an assembly building, a community use building, you will make accommodations around and within your building to get disabled people into your building. It's not a building code. It's not something that's handled here locally with your local inspectors and your building department. It's a federal law. I want to emphasize that because you're living on borrowed time here. The law says that you will fix your building to make sure a person in a wheelchair, a person on crutches, a person who is blind can get to your building, into your building, and around your building. The reason I'm saying this is that you have a courtroom on the top floor of your building, and you don't know from day to day who may be called to that courtroom to either testify, to be part of a jury trial, to be a participant in any shape or form, and right now you really don't have a way to get them up there. What you see here, this is your one way into the courthouse, which actually is a ramp that goes down from the street to the lowest level of the courthouse to get into the lowest level. Unfortunately, once you get into that lowest level, you can't get anywhere legally through that building because your elevator, which is a picture of this right here, doesn't meet handicap standards. That doesn't mean that you can't help somebody in a wheelchair and shove them in there and get them in, but the federal law says a person in a wheelchair should be able to wheel themselves around the building and get in and out of the building and certainly get up to the courtyard without any problems. So it's a serious issue that you should be looking at right now. You've already gone through some 26 years without it. If someone was to sue you in federal court, you're going to have to defend yourself. And it's going to be hard to defend yourself if you don't make an effort to make your building accessible. You're not alone here. Every courthouse in the state of Indiana, every courthouse in the country is grappling with ways to fix problems like this. Problems like these steps that back in 100 years ago when this building was built was very common. And other courthouses, my own courthouse in Tippecanoe County, solved this problem probably 12 to 15 years ago with the addition of entrances and ramps and stairways and elevators, things like that to fix the problem. So that's kind of where we're going. So this is a site plan showing on the right-hand side is your existing building there right in the center of the slide. And on the left-hand side is a new planned addition to your courthouse. What that's going to do for you is several things. Number one is, if you see on the very far left, right here, this is a new plaza we would create at the lowest level, which is about 2 feet below street level. So this plaza would be built at slightly below street level. These are handicapped parking spots that would be built new along the west side. So we can get someone who does need some assistance and be able to get in the building quickly to be able to do that. They come in. This would be basically one point of entrance to your courthouse. You heard Jeff talk about this a little bit. The idea is to bring all the public in on the west side of your courthouse. There will be a system in there in the lobby. You'll see it in a minute here. To go through security to make sure that everybody that walks in the courthouse should be there and they're not going to cause harm while they're in there. These two buildings or entrances on the east and on the north would remain as they are. They'll look the same as they've always looked, but there'll be signage directing you to the west door. Those doors would be locked during working hours. They'll always be used for exiting so you can get out of the building in case of emergency, but you will not be able to enter into the building through those doors. Keep in mind also in your courthouse, which is a little bit unique, you also have another entrance there and right now on this side on the lower level. So you've got doors stacked up. So you can either go down these steps into the doors below or down those steps or go up the steps and go on the second level. So if you start counting entrances you have to your courthouse that are right now completely unsecured, you've got doors all the way around the courthouse. That needs to be corrected. You know, I hate to say this, but we live in a different world than what we did 30 years ago or 40 years ago where we have to protect those people that are working in the courthouse, that are visiting the courthouse, that may have business in the courthouse, to make sure they can get in and get out safely without any kind of problems. Go ahead. So this gives you an idea. This is your existing upper floor plan. I just wanted to show this plan by itself because maybe some of you have never been in the courthouse. You've not done a lot of business there. If you came in here to the school, you came in on the ground floor, you got around pretty easily for ADA requirements. This is your courtroom up on the upper floor right there. And this is right now the commissioners and council offices, if you've ever been to those. You know that the way you get both here, is up this central flight of steps. That's the only way in and out of this upper floor. We're talking about very stressful situations, whether it's financial stress or a divorce or a car accident or whatever. The reason to end up in that courtroom or to end up in the commissioner's office or council office, people are stressed out. And we know that that's where things can happen and things can go a little bit sideways. And right now you're looking at a position where this central stairway is the way in and out. If you can imagine court hearings going on in here, someone comes in and they're out to cause harm for somebody else, they control the stairway, they've now controlled that whole floor. I don't want to be the bearer of bad news. You're a small county and farming community. You probably don't live in this life very often, but the reality is it can happen anywhere. It can happen in anybody's backyard. So it's something to think about. So, okay, so now we're going to go through really quickly. This is the main floor of the addition, and the idea here is to create this new entrance on the west side. This is a secure lobby right here with the equipment to be able to test people to make sure they're not coming in with something that's magnetic, a gun or a weapon or a knife or something. These doors are secured, and once you go through the system, then you come in the courthouse. This is the way it's done all across the country now. There's an elevator here, and there's a stair tower here. So in this new addition, we're going to create the ability to go vertically up and down through this building for people that are handicapped as well as people that are able to walk around and just want to get from one part of the building to another. In your current building, this is the elevator that's there right now. You can see the difference in size between that elevator and this elevator. This elevator is large enough to carry a gurney. If you did have a court hearing and somebody was to faint or pass out or have a heart attack, you want to get them out and get them into medical care right away. Right now, the only way to get them out is through either this elevator, which is not user-friendly. If you've been there, you know it's got the old-fashioned gates, or to take them down the stairway. This elevator will give you access to all floors quickly to get somebody out in case of emergency. We're also looking at moving the commissioner and the council's offices meeting room down to the first floor, which means at nighttime, if they're having meetings, and we've met there several times, right now the entire courthouse is open because they're meeting up on the top floor. The idea is to put them in this room where they can meet on the ground floor. We can actually lock this pair of doors here that separates the new from the old, and you can come and go through these doors as you need to. So it's a much safer environment, and it also makes it easier to get in and out. You're on the main floor. There are handicapped restrooms right here. Here we would add, right now, none of the restrooms in your building are handicapped accessible. So these would give you new, large, modern restrooms that you can use for staff as well as public. Go up to the next floor. So the next floor up, these are offices. We're talking about making some more space for growth. Keep in mind this building's 100 years old. You can't imagine how crowded it is in this courthouse right now. Every government, county, entity in the country has grown in size. You all know as you live your life, you fill out tons and tons of paperwork nowadays that you didn't do 100 years ago. If you're buying a house or you're recording something at the county or you're filing papers for whatever purpose, you're going to fill out a lot more paper. There's a lot more people working in this building than there was 100 years ago. And there's no growth. So we're going to add some growth. These are offices. And these are offices. Again, there's the central stairwell and the central elevator, which ties into this corridor, which means now a person in a wheelchair can ride the elevator, come up to this floor, which right now is not accessible, and get to anywhere on this floor as well as this floor. And there are the restrooms. Go ahead. This is the next floor up right here. Part of this is attic space for the roofing system that you heard Phil talk about that's kind of similar over here. This is the floor of the courthouse. This shows some of these dash-in areas, gives you some more space to grow over the years. This is the commissioners and council's meeting room now, which will become growth space for other offices in the courthouse. This also, I didn't mention this, but this also provides a way to bring prisoners up. Right now, prisoners come in the building and go up the same stairway that you would go up if you're going to the courtroom. Not the best situation. In this case, the prisoners would come up the back of the elevator, come in this hallway here, and come into what I would call a sally port or a holding cell. And when they're called into the courtroom, they come directly into the back of the courtroom and go in the witness stand. The idea is to separate the jury from the prisoner, separate the public from the jury, as well as separate the jury would be using this space over here, the jury room's here. So we're separating these people. This is not just something we're doing because it's available to us. It's something that's being mandated by courts all across the country to make sure these people are separated so there is no chance of problems. So here's one of the exterior elevations. This happens to be the north. There's your existing courthouse. This is the addition we were planning. And you can see our goal here is to put an addition on it that looks very nice with it. Same material, same pallet material, sandstone, slate roof. The roof pitches are similar. This is actually the elevator tower. There's some glass windows. The idea is to blend them together. I'll go through these really quick here. This would be the south elevation. Your existing south elevation, if you didn't know, is kind of the back of the building. It's a little bit more plain than the other elevations. So this would be the south elevation of what we're going to add on. This is the east. In this case, that's what it looks like right now. You don't really see our addition at all on the east side. And on the west side, this would be our addition on the front of the larger piece. So this is the pair of doors right here that you would go in as a business person or someone going to the courts or someone going to the commissioner's office. This is kind of an isometric of a bird's eye view. Again, there's your existing building, and here's the new addition to it. And this is from the other side. There's the addition, and there's the larger building. This is kind of a rendering of what it would look like. Again, the main building that's there now looks like that, and this would be the new addition out in front on the west side. Is that it? All right. I'm going to turn it over to Todd now. He's going to talk a little bit about the money.
Good evening. My name is Todd Samuelson. I'm a partner with Umbaugh. We've been retained by the county to assist in this process to talk about how a project, as you've just heard about, can be funded, what that framework is, and based on the financing plan that the county would choose, then ultimately what would be the impact to the taxpayers of Pulaski County to accomplish this project, as you've heard described. Unfortunately, unlike the architects and the engineers, a whole lot of numbers doesn't present itself very well in pictures. I do have handouts that the commissioners and the council all have, and the auditor has copies as well. If anybody would like a copy after the meeting, they can certainly be made available. Before I get into the numbers, a little bit about who Umbaugh is. We are a CPA firm started in Plymouth, Indiana, which is actually where I'm from. And we've been in business here in Indiana for over 65 years. As a CPA firm, we specialize in assisting public entities. So our client list are counties, schools, cities and towns, et cetera, throughout Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. And I've had the fortune to work with the county, Pulaski County, for years. I've been with the firm for about 26 years currently. So before I actually get into the numbers, I want to talk a little bit about how does a county finance or fund a project as you've just heard described. Most of us are accustomed to much smaller numbers in our personal lives. If we have to consider improvements, renovations or additions to our business, to our home, et cetera, it's kind of hard to get our minds wrapped around $6, $7, $8 million unless you're in a different situation than I am. But we're accustomed to smaller numbers, but the process is not totally different. But I'm going to draw some comparisons on what the county has available to it as far as options so that hopefully it can kind of translate to situations that maybe you're a little more familiar with. For a county to fund this type of project, one of the questions that we typically get, well, why don't you have the money on hand to address or fund this type of project? Why do you have to go out and borrow money to make these types of improvements? The rules and regulations that have been set up by the State Board of Accounts, the Department of Local Government Finance, do not allow, in essence, and I'm not going to go through all the rules, for a taxing unit such as Pulaski County to accumulate the kind of dollars that are being discussed here this evening for this type of project. That the county is not in the business, if you will, of making a profit and setting money aside to the level that we're talking about here this evening. What the state has done is put in a structure that recognizes that counties and a lot of governmental units do not have this type of money on hand. So what type of processes must they go through in order to fund or finance this type of project? What we might do in our own situation, go to a bank and borrow money, for example, to complete the improvements and the addition. There are many rules that the county needs to follow. I'm going to touch on just a few of those. I'm not an attorney, but we've been through this process many, many times. The county, first of all, needs to consider there's something known as the constitutional debt limit. And the county has a debt limit that it must abide by. If it's going to issue debt directly payable by property taxes of the county, and I want to be clear that the improvements that are being discussed here and the repayment of any financing would be supported by property taxes. I know the county has a variety of income taxes also in place, but what we're talking about here this evening is repaying the financing through taxes that would be generated from a property tax without impacting the income taxes that are currently in place. The rule or the structure that the state has set up calls for, again, the county can issue debt directly, and it's based on the total assessed valuation for the county and that debt limit, and for the elected officials, that's reflected on page 2 of the handout, is roughly $6.1 million. So that's the amount of dollars that the county can go out and directly borrow that would be repaid from property taxes. That's typically referred to as a general obligation bond, where individually we might go get a mortgage from a bank, or a company, public company, might issue stock to raise money for a project. The form available to public entities such as the county is to issue bonds, tax-exempt bonds, that would be sold in the open market, and the county would use those proceeds to fund the project. Since the scope of this project, depending again on decisions by the county on what that total scope would be, would likely be at or above that direct bonding capacity, that's not unusual. We're talking about a constitutional debt limit that has been in place, well, since the Constitution was drafted for the state of Indiana. So many projects that we get involved with for schools, counties, cities, and towns do not fit within that constitutional debt limit because it's antiquated in terms of, you know, you mentioned a lot more people work in the county building. Well, the dollars necessary to improve and add on to likely could be more than what the county building was constructed at over 100 years ago. So a lot of things have changed. So this type of project would likely be funded through what we call a lease financing. And this is very common, where the bonds would be issued by a building corporation that would be established, and the county, in essence, would become a tenant and lease the county structure from this building corporation. It sounds complicated. It's really not, and it's a form of financing that is fairly typical for these types of projects. When we look at the total budget, and there was mentioned, Jeff had mentioned earlier, the cost, the estimated cost for the project in terms of the addition, renovations that are necessary to be funded for the improvements that have been identified. Before I actually get into a total budget here, another thing I wanted to point out, oftentimes we get questions, well, if this starts moving forward, it's really going to cost a whole lot more, and the county's going to be able to spend a whole lot more than what's being discussed or presented here this evening. Again, the process that has been established within the state of Indiana, when a project gets authorized by the council and the commissioners to move forward, they must establish parameters that the cost of the project will not exceed a certain amount. The debt will not be repaid for more than a certain number of years. So those parameters are established up front, and they cannot be exceeded. So that I just wanted to point out that as well, because it does factor into the overall budget that I'm going to talk about here this evening. Even though we have professional engineers, architects, maintenance, everybody looking at this project, the fact of the matter is we don't have construction bids in hand, so there's still a lot of work to be done and numbers to be accumulated. But in order to start that project and for the council commissioners to establish those ceilings in terms of the cost will not go over a certain amount, We do build in contingencies to the budget at this stage to allow for, as the architects, engineers work further, design, and ultimately get bids, that we have some flexibility, if you will, to that. And as professional, as good as these gentlemen are, I'm sure, we all know that we're also talking about an old building. So once you get in, we oftentimes get a question, well, what if you get a surprise? How are you going to fund something that may not be visible to the eye, or a drone in this case? That's pretty cool to use drones. I hadn't seen that before. So we do build in not only contingencies before the bids are received, but we also build in contingencies even after the bids are received to allow for change orders or those types of things that may occur. So when we look at, and for the public officials here, it starts on page 3, when we look at the total budget for this project, as was mentioned, the new addition is estimated at $2.8 million. The structural repairs to the existing courthouse is estimated at $1.1 million. The courtyard, there's some dollars identified for courtyard at $120,000. The attic repairs that were talked about at $75,000. And then the other renovations that you saw identified to the existing courthouse beyond the structural repairs is estimated at $2.5 million. So the total budget with all of that included for construction is approximately $6 million, or just a hair under $6.6 million. In addition to that, as I mentioned, we are going to recommend, and we have built into the budget contingencies against those numbers. Also building in other what we call soft costs. I don't like that term, but they're non-construction or direct construction costs for architectural, engineering, site work, permitting, furnishing and equipment, signage, the GC. All of those things have to be built in. Again, we have to make sure that the total budget is a total budget. Because once the process starts, you can't go over what's been authorized in terms of a total dollar amount. So we built in an additional $1,650,000. A lot of that is contingency. It would not be unusual at this stage of the game to have a minimum of 10% contingency built into the project, which just by itself would be $600,000. Finally, we need to add to the budget cost of financing. Now, these may be things that are somewhat more familiar. If you go to a bank to make improvements on your home or an addition, there's something called interest during the construction phase that needs to be built into the budget. We call it capitalized interest. But again, that's interest during the construction phase that needs to be funded. So we're estimating that it depends on the length of financing and how much that interest during construction would be. But we have built that into the budget, roughly $200,000. The underwriter, which in this discussion is the same thing as a bank, the underwriter is a firm or a group of firms that would come in and actually purchase the bonds that would be issued by the county to fund the project. And then they turn around and sell bonds to individuals, investors, or those that want to purchase bonds as an investment tool. But they work at a fee, similar to a bank putting points on a mortgage. The underwriters work for a fee. We built a maximum of 1% or about $85,000 for this project. And finally, for the cost of issuance, there are professionals such as myself, county attorney, bond counsel, a trustee bank, a rating agency, maybe a bond insurance company. Those are all entities that get involved and are necessary when a county or a public entity is going to the market to issue debt. So when we build all those things in together, we have a total budget, again, inclusive of the addition, all the repairs that have been identified and renovations, with the engineering contingencies, cost of financing estimated at approximately $8.6 million. Obviously, the county can, or, they can take the total scope or they can change that. We've got different scenarios for the county to consider based on total budget or something less than that. But I'm going to talk this evening from total budget, and any decisions or contraction of that total scope We can talk, or if there's questions regarding that, I can certainly get into that as well. And for the council and commissioners, when we talk about a total budget of $8.6 million, we're also showing options to repay that over either 15 years or 20 years. The maximum in the state of Indiana for repaying a debt like this, you cannot go beyond 20 years by statute. So anything less than that certainly can be considered. And we wanted to show the impact. If you pay it off shorter, obviously you have less interest costs on the financing, but then the annual payment is higher each year. Again, similar to what you might do, do I want a 15-year mortgage or a 20-year mortgage, that type of analysis. So when we translate, and I'm going to talk, now from the 15-year financing scenario, because that would have the highest per year payment, which would translate to the highest annual property tax rate that would be necessary to pay back the bonds, as well as then translating that to the highest tax impact that we have here in terms of four different scenarios for the county to consider. In looking at a repayment of $8 million, or roughly $8.6 million over 15 years, we've taken a look at the current interest rate market. The county can borrow at much lower interest rates than what you and I can borrow at, because they're borrowing at tax-exempt interest rates. So if I were to purchase one of the bonds that Pulaski County was issuing, that would be a conflict of interest, and I wouldn't do that. But if an investor would buy one of those bonds, the interest that you get off that investment is tax exempt. Because of that, the interest rates associated with this type of borrowing are lower than what's accessible to you and I or a private business. So right now we're estimating the interest rate based on current market conditions, which are quite favorable for public entities to go out and borrow money at tax exempt interest rates. The interest rate on a 15-year bond issue right now would probably average around 3% or less to borrow money over a 15-year period. So when we do that, we come up with an annual payment of roughly $850,000 per year that the county would need to generate from property taxes to repay the loan, if you will, to fund the improvements. Now, instead of just structuring that as a straight $850,000 per year for 15 years, we're also looking at any other debt that the county currently has outstanding. And the only other debt that the county currently has are the remaining payments on the jail for the bonds that were issued approximately 15 years ago to fund the county jail project. And those payments remain through the year 2021. So what we recommend in a situation like this, in order to minimize the impact on taxpayers, is to what we call weave in, if you will, the payments on this project as the payments on the jail project pay out over the next 4 years. So when we do what we're after here is a level amortization or repayment, and also to minimize the impact on the tax rate for the constituents of the county. The remaining payments on the jail are roughly $520,000 per year to pay off that the remaining bonds that were issued for that project. About $215,000 of that is payable through the income tax that's in place for the county jail. The balance of approximately $305,000 per year is paid from property taxes. So as that $305,000 goes away when the jail bonds are paid off, that levy of taxes can be then utilized for the repayment of this project, which in essence then reduces the impact on the overall property tax rate for the county. So based on all these numbers, we're estimating the impact on the tax rate. In other words, how much would the property tax rate go up based on all these estimates, current market rates, et cetera, and we're estimating that impact to be about 5 cents on the tax rate. In other words, a 0.05 change on the property tax rate in order to fund this project. I do this for a living. I do it every day. And even I struggle, what does 5 cents mean on my tax bill? So I'm going to translate that to what that means to tax bills here in Pulaski County. And I know that everybody in the room has a different set of circumstances, and I'm not going to hit everybody in the room in terms of what 5 cents will do to your tax bill, but I'm going to give you a range based on property values for homesteads, and then you can even commercial property and farm ground, and you can translate that to your own situation, or if you have specific questions, I'll be here after the meeting to try and answer those. When we look at Pulaski County, the average home value or homestead throughout the county is $92,300. That's the average market value for homesteads in the county. And I know nobody's average, and I know how you get an average. There are some below, there are some higher. But the average in the county is $92,300. If you pay attention to your property tax bill on your homestead, you're not taxed at market value. You get homestead deduction. You get a supplemental homestead deduction before you get or arrive at what is actually the value that you're ultimately taxed at on that homestead property. For a homestead property at $92,300, after the consideration of the homestead deduction at $45,000, the supplemental deduction of 35%, you probably or many would have a mortgage deduction as well. Your taxable value is going to be below $30,000 on that $92,000 home value. So when we apply that to the 5 cent impact, again, maximum budget, 15-year repayment, we're talking about an impact on the annual per year tax bill at just over $15 per year. I know many taxpayers fund this, their property taxes twice a year, so you may pay half of that every 6 months, which would be roughly $7.50. Many taxpayers might fund that through your escrow, so it's part of your monthly payment to the bank. So if it's on a monthly budget, it would be just over, what is that, about $1.25, $1.50 per month impact on your monthly escrow payment. Again, that's an average home in the county. We've got other, it's not necessarily linear because the homestead deduction relative to the home value changes. So if you have questions on your actual value, I'm going to stay and try to answer those. Taxing farm ground is different than homesteads. I know there's a lot of farm ground in Pulaski County, very good farm ground. So I've also put together an estimate of what the impact would be for every 100 acres of farm ground. And I know that the legislature recently, in this last session, changed the methodology for farm ground assessment, which will reduce farm ground assessment. But based on what these numbers are based on, again, for 100 acres, is the assumption that the per acre assessment would be $2,100. And that can change based on productivity factors. I know that, so I'm not hitting maybe anyone in the room, but just so you know what that number is based on for farm ground, it's an assumption that the tax assessment would be $2,100 per acre. So based on those assumptions, for 100 acres, it would translate to just under $116 per year. So if you've got 500 acres, you would multiply that 116 times 5. If you got 50, you would take half of it. If you've got 2,000, you can understand how the math works at that point. For a commercial property, if there's folks in the room that own commercial property, I did it for $1 million commercial property. The annual impact, again, commercial property is assessed differently. There's no exemptions like there is on a homestead. But a commercial property at $1 million would see an impact of approximately $550 per year. And again, you can take factors less or more than that based on your own situation. That is the information I have to share here this evening about the process that the county can go through, how a project like this is financed, and then ultimately what is the estimated tax impact on property tax bills based on those assumptions. And again, I'll be here if I can answer any questions after the meeting.
I just wanted to take a second and thank these guys for coming up here and giving their presentations. I appreciate it. I also wanted to reiterate that the only approval that's been given thus far is the approval for the attic repair, and that's just because of the state that it's in. All of the rest of the information that these gentlemen has provided with us, or for us, is still in the works. We are in early planning stages on everything. No other decisions have been made. So I don't want anybody to think that all of this is already given the green light. We're getting ready to knock stuff down and put stuff up, because that's not the case. Outside, when you came in, if you had questions you'd like to ask, you were able to do so. So at this time, we'll start that process. And the first gentleman on the list is Mr. Joe Moyer.
Has any assessment been done on lead, asbestos, and mold?
We had some portions of the courthouse tested for mold and asbestos. We sent it through the health department, had it tested at the state, and it came back negative. And when the air quality test was done by the state, they tested quality throughout the courthouse, and they found no mold in the building.
Well, your paint, anytime you disturb the paint, there is lead in it, this old building. Plaster, more than likely, has asbestos in it. I think one of the pictures
shows the black mold. Okay. Well, like I said, we've had the folks from the state level come in and do the testing. And that's not to say that we don't have those things in some parts of it. I know, was it Fritz that was saying that the metalwork around the top, it actually contained lead in it?
It is lead-coated tin.
If that helps answer your question. I mean, if more extensive testing needs to be done, that's something that we can definitely look at. But at this point, I know that we've done air quality tests more than once through the state, particularly in the basement level. And I know that we've taken some samples from the main floor, and we've sent that in for asbestos testing. And they've all come back negative. So, that answer your question okay? Okay. The next question is Mr. Don Good.
And I want to just kind of make first statement to you guys. I appreciate the fact that you're willing to sit behind his desk and do the county business. There's about three jobs I definitely don't want: school board, your jobs, or a high school referee. So I appreciate that you guys are willing to stand and do that. But I guess my question kind of goes around to the alternatives of what you presented here. Because when we do a project, we always sit down, the first thing we do is look at revenues and budgets. And then we can make a list of this is what we need to do, and this is what we want to do. And then we start pricing out the needs. And once we've covered all the needs of the project, then we move to the wants. So when I look at it, at this project, I look at the needs, we definitely got to get the ADA things. We've got to take care of the structure of our building. We've got a great courthouse here. There's a historic value. I would hate to see the community lose that. We have to provide for the safety of all of the people who work in that courthouse. So those are all the needs I think that we need to take a look at. Can we accomplish those needs as something that may cost a little bit less? Because when I look at my overall cost to being in Plaskett County, I understand this is not going to hit income taxes. We're hit at the highest rate in the county. Currently, my company pays about $1,000 a day in property taxes. It's not all in Plaskett County. But all those things, as you continue to look at and continue to add them up, they do have an impact on us and where we decide to do business, where we decide to work business, where we decide to live. I'm a Southwest Corporation. My brother's 50% owner. He lives in Fulton County. I live in Plaskett County. My tax bite is about $15,000 to $20,000 a year more for living in Plaskett County. Is for living in Fulton County. So as we look at these things, I think, when I would urge you guys, have you looked at, can we take the current building? Can we address ADA? Can we address security? Can we address those things without having to do the addition and without that extra cost on it? Because it does impact all of us. With the farm tax, I don't think we really know exactly what impact that's going to have on the county yet. I'm assuming we haven't had time to do an assessment of that. That's a concern. I would hate to see the, you know, the risk environment in this county change to the point where we lose a Braun or a Gallup or something like that. So, you know, I guess my question is, have we looked at the way we can meet all the needs in this project without extra cost of the addition?
We've looked at other alternatives, and you made a very good point. Come up with the pros and cons, figure out what the needs are, and how we can budget those. And you know, a lot of the reason that we're sitting here is because when we started this project or process, I should say, 3 years ago, we were trying to point out where our deficiencies were and what exactly it was going to take to right those. As I said, at this point, there's nothing set in stone yet. We're still looking at viable options, but that field of viable options is starting to narrow. The building of the addition is a way to fix everything in one swoop. And if it's decided that we're going to go that route and we're going to do the addition and we're going to do the renovation, we do everything that's on the list, then we are good for another 50 years. We have room for growth. The building will last another 100 years. It's lasted over 100 years now. It was built well. So, again, nothing is set in stone yet. There are still a lot of conversation to be had. There's a lot of figures to be mulled over, and a lot more discussion. So, at this point, we are in that process. Did that satisfy your question? Okay.
Sure. If we have something, maybe look at a budget that we can look at to say to fix what we've got is this. You make a good point. It would be foolish to fix it for 10 years for 3/4 of the cost.
Right.
But you know, without knowing what the cost of this fix what we have is kind of hard to make a call.
Right, and that's the structural, and you know, I guess budgeting for the complete cost of the renovation and the structural, we have those numbers. Those numbers were presented earlier. Todd had mentioned all of it together, the extra cost for financing and all that added on top of it. So you guys not only got the project cost, but you also got the exploded view of what the total is going to be. So if you want to see those numbers, if you want to see the cost breakdown, my contact information is on cards outside. I invite anybody to come in and talk to me. I'm in the basement of the courthouse. Call me anytime. I will make any information that I have available to any of you. Okay?
I think that, too, that's going to be on our website, right? This information that you presented today, Todd, that has the breakdown on it, like you were talking about. It does have all three levels.
Okay, the last question that I have listed is from Larry Roush.
Actually, I have two questions. One of you gentlemen talked about courthouses being out of compliance, and what's the percentage of courthouses that are out of compliance right now? Are we the only lone dog out there, or are we in the 50% bracket, or how many is out of compliance?
I can't speak as far right now at telling you how many's out of compliance. I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
If there's a lot of courthouses out of compliance, they both worry. What's the big rush here to hurry up and shove this through? Yeah. I'm sure there's several other courthouses out of compliance.
Well, there's two ways to answer that question. The first way to answer that question is there probably are other courthouses out there that's not in compliance. And the reason that we need to get it into compliance is because if, on a yearly basis, the County Highway Garage has to put in a questionnaire about where they fit where the county fits in its ADA compliance standards. At any time, the Department of Transportation can do a survey on us, an audit, and if they find that we are not in compliance, then we lose our federal funding immediately. And not just the current federal funding, all future federal funding. So the rush is, I'm not saying that we're trying to rush this through. This is up to this point, it's taken 3 years. But the importance of this is to make sure that we get compliant before that happens.
Now you're talking about we lose federal funding. How much money is that?
Do you know what the...
Terry, do you know your federal funding for highway, your road projects? Your bridges, your roads, the federal money that comes from those, the state funding?
It's for the bridge inspections right now. So I think we're talking, God, I'm guessing, to around, I'm not sure, I'm going to say 100,000 or so for a year rate.
So we lose 100,000 out of 6 million dollars.
Calm down there, I'm just going to ballpark.
Even if you're off a lot, that's still...
Well, if you get into this federal funding, it's a deep, it's just like the bridge up there at Monterey. You got to use federal funds for the river bridge.
Right.
Up there. They go 80% of the county.
It's a variable that is always changing depending on our projects. And they can say, if you don't have this compliance, we're not going to fund you. So it'll be all on your own local dollars.
But in addition to that, we are also at the mercy of any lawsuit against the county for just not being accessible. If we have someone that needs accessibility, and let's just say, for example, they're in a wheelchair, one of the motorized wheelchairs, and they cannot get to the court level, they can sue us. And being on the ADA committee, I read stories almost on a weekly basis of communities that are sued for sometimes tens of millions of dollars, and they're winning. They're winning because these compliance mandates were supposed to be complete in 2012. We're 4 years past that deadline.
And my other question is, we've seen some pretty nasty bills about the condition of the courthouse. And I love the courthouse like Don does, but if it's in that bad a condition, kind of why are we throwing money into something that's in that bad shape? Maybe we should tear it down and put up a whole new system, which I hate to see happen. We closed our county home down because there's no funds. It costs more to keep the upkeep than that. And anytime you get into a building like that, like this gentleman says, there's surprises. There's asbestos. There's going to be a whole nightmare if you start digging around in there.
And you make a very good point. You're absolutely right. At any time you get into a maintenance project of any kind and you start delving into it, it always turns out to be something different, always. I want to agree with you. However, the repairs that the building needs at this point, the building's not going to fall over tomorrow. And we can take steps now to make that building last another 100 years. That's part of this. The other part of this is just simply saying we're going to tear that building down. It's not that simple. They've made it very difficult once a building is on historical registry to do anything to it, let alone tear it down. We could be looking at a two-year process just to get permission to do that, and then at the end them not give it to us. And then you've got all the legal fees wrapped up into that, and by the time we get to that point, we could have the building repaired already. If you know, judging by the numbers that I gave earlier, just for the repair of the building, that's not that much in the grand scheme.
If there's no problem.
Right. Well, even if there is problems, those are contingencies like these gentlemen have said that's already built in to take care of those. You're right. There are several stipulations that we are governed by the Historical Society, all of which these gentlemen are very familiar with. Mr. Groubreth has worked on several county courthouses in the state. This is something that these people are very well versed in. They were chosen because of those reasons.
And that all has to be approved before it's actually moved forward.
I'm sorry? Oh, is that the case? The addition would have to be approved?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Can I add my name to the list to ask a question?
Sure.
All right.
What's your name?
Jim Gould. Here's a deal. There was a school project here, not the current one, the one before. We go to all the meetings, and this isn't the time to slow it down. We aren't at that point now. all of a sudden we show up to one meeting and you can't really slow it down now. We've already spent over $1 million. I don't want to get in that kind of situation again.
And I can understand that too. That's not how this works. Every decision that's being made on this project is going to be made at a public meeting, just like all of the decisions up to this point have been. So if you keep up with the agendas of the meetings that are coming up, you'll know when it's going to be discussed. The decisions will come before the commissioners, and the decisions will come before the council openly in a public forum, and nothing is being hidden here.
Well, and that wasn't then either. I never missed a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about, we're looking at this, we're looking at that. Before you know it, the engineers and everything else they've got done, we've spent $1 million, and if we don't do something, we're out.
Yeah, no, that can't happen in this case. There's too many people involved at too many levels, and if anything, both the Board of Commissioners and the County Council want to make sure it's done correctly. So, good night. That's all I got. Thank you.
Jerry's got a question. Is it okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm Jerry Locke, and I'm kind of a numbers nerd, and you were saying a 0.05 increase on the property tax, and then you gave another number for 100 acres at $116.
Per year, correct.
Them numbers don't drive at all in my situation. I own some farm ground, figure with 0.05 it comes to X amount, figure the 100 acres times 116, it's almost double the 0.05.
I'm glad to go through that after the meeting. That's probably the most effective way to do that.
Okay.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
I want to make sure you're comfortable.
Well, I'm not.
I know you're not. And this year the rates didn't change, but the assessed value did. Yeah. So at the end, that's what most people look at.
Sure.
Is your tax rate? Your taxes were up. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just no way around it. And you call in with the tax rate stayed the same. Well, hey, the bottom line is, at the end out here, is what you're paying. And when it goes up, I understand that, but what people look at is the dollars they write the check.
And that's why I try to get through that particular amount. I'm glad to talk to you about how we calculate that.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? We're going to recess our
adjourn the commissioner portion of this joint session.
Second.
We'll recess ours and continue at the courthouse for our regular public meeting.
Thank you, everyone, for attending. Appreciate it.
Great, great job, guys.